Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Banzai Retro Club and 80s Mixtape Auto Reverse. We are continuing our conversation on concerts with Robin and Chris, and this is part two of a two-part series. So if you have not listened to part one, go back and listen to part one, and then continue on and catch this one after you're done with that. So here we go.
Great compilation tape. Like breaking up is hard to do and takes ages longer than it might seem. You got to kick it off with a killer to grab attention. Then you got to take it up a notch. But you don't want to blow your wad, so then you got to cool it off a notch. There are a lot of rules.
12 albums, 1 cent. Find our ad in Sunday's paper. Take it to your mailbox. You'll get a lot more music. You'll get a lot more life. Look in your Sunday paper.
Welcome, listener. For those about to rock, we salute you. This is our podcast dedicated to exploring and talking about the greatness that was the music of the best decade. If you're ready for the best in retro music topics on the planet, we present for your enjoyment 80s Mixtape Auto Reverse.
Anyway, back to Chris.
Okay.
Chris, well, what's your second pick?
I'll go number two, and this was 1995, and it was in Orlando, at the Orlando Arena complex, and it was an opportunity to see something that I never thought I'd be able to see in my entire life, because they were disbanded when I was 11, and that was Page and Plant playing together as Led Zeppelin songs. This was their, I can't remember the name of the album, but anyway, remember like 94, they released an album, they played together, they had a couple of songs, and they did the MTV thing, they did the MTV Unplugged thing, and of course it went over so well that they did a tour, because if Led Zeppelin does anything, they monetize. That's what they do.
You mean like Kiss?
Yes, before Kiss. Kiss modeled all that stuff after Peter Grant, the manager for Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
Peter Grant was so hands-on that he would walk through the arena to make sure during a Led Zeppelin concert that no one was selling in the hallways fake merchandise, because that happened all the time. Printed T-shirts. Anything that had Led Zeppelin on it, the name and image, anything like that, Peter Grant was in control of. He was the forerunner in rock music about being a manager, and Led Zeppelin monetized everything. And then, you know, later Gene Simmons mostly did that with Kiss. But anyway, that's a whole other podcast, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So, but this was not intimate per se. Wasn't like the Unplugged thing. But it was just great to see those two on stage playing Led Zeppelin songs. It was only the two of them. It wasn't John Paul Jones. He was not invited to go to that, to be a part of that, which I always thought was terrible being a bass player, that John Paul Jones. But John Paul Jones in Led Zeppelin is also another whole podcast, because he's just...
He was truly the backbone.
He was more than the backbone. Yeah. But in any case, but to see
central
those
nervous
two,
system,
pretty Same. Much, yeah. pretty much the blood flow, all that stuff. Just see those two on stage together playing Led Zeppelin songs was, you know, Plant's voice wasn't Plant's voice that you think, you know, when you hear Led Zeppelin songs, and Jimmy was a little sloppy, but he's always a little sloppy in his guitar playing, because that's a bluesy thing. But it was just great. It was just something that I never thought I'd be able to see. And here's another thing on the ticket price. That ticket was $125 in 1995.
Wow.
Which in those days would be, you know, that would be a $400 concert ticket.
Where do I fill out the credit application?
Yeah, exactly. I saved for 6 months to be able to go see that concert.
Wow.
And it was just incredible. It was something I never thought I'd be able to see, was Page and Plant on the same, you know, with the Les Paul guitar and the whole thing, playing Led Zeppelin songs, and it was just amazing. You know, there's nothing else spectacular about the show other than the fact that I was there in the same place as Robert Plant and Jimmy Page while they were playing Led Zeppelin songs. Hmm. I don't even care what happened around me. I was so focused on the fact that I'm seeing basically what my generation will ever see of Led Zeppelin playing live.
Yeah.
Besides that complete debacle that was Live Aid, which I don't even count that. It was a disaster. But that concert, it stick. So if you think about it, like, that's my number two. So number one has to be pretty damn impressive, because that's a pretty impressive number, you know, second concert on this list. But yeah, it was absolutely amazing. Just a lifelong memory to be able to say I was in the same place while those two were playing music together. Just incredible.
That is incredible. So I guess this, Robin, do you have anything to add to this?
No, only that I'm sure it was amazing, even if it sucked, right?
that's the kind of thing.
Like, if you have the chance to go, you go. Like, I went to see a Ramones show, and I was bored, and it was terrible. But, like, you go see the Ramones. You don't pass up that opportunity, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, some of it kind of did suck, like, a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because Plant's voice wasn't really there like you would think you want it to be, because you want it to be. You want it to sound like something. You want it to sound like the record. Or you want it to sound like, you know, the live concert footage that you heard when you were younger.
Right.
And it didn't most of the time. But I didn't care, because it's Robert Plant and Jimmy Page. Like, they could have come out with ukuleles and blue bubbles. It didn't matter. I wouldn't have cared.
I would have paid to see that.
Yeah, there's
I would have paid $125 to see that. Like, literally. Like, and I might have had the same reaction that Robin had when Jeff Tate took off his shirt if Jimmy Page would take off his shirt. I don't know. I can't say for sure. But, no, it was just that. And that, you're absolutely right, because that's it. Even if it did suck a little bit or a lot, it still was those two. Like, the epicenter of live concert, hard rock, whatever you want to call it. Like, that... That's the root of the heavy metal tree.
Oh yeah,
and absolutely. And I was there, and us and some other people, you know, me, were there to see it, like, in whatever state that it was in, and however old they were, or whatever, or their level of disinterest, who knows, you know. But that was really just amazing.
They defined the sound between them and Sabbath.
Yes, I mean, thank you. I was going to say Sabbath. Right,
that is the origin of heavy metal. I mean, when we talk about heavy metal, it's because of those two bands, because they played in ways that were different, you know, and toned things down and detuned things. And that is what defined that generation of sound. And so, yeah, I mean, you go witness that when you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, and think for a second. Think about it being like 1969, 68, 69, 70, and you're in London, and you work in a recording studio in London, and one day you walk in, and like, in room A is Led Zeppelin recording, and room C is like Black Sabbath recording.
Ugh.
Like, I mean, can you imagine that? Because you imagine walking into that, like, you're the janitor at ABC Studio in London, and you walk in, it's like, oh, there's Tony Iommi, like, peeing on the carpet. And then, like, it's just, how cool is that? I mean, that's really cool.
Would you have known what you were witnessing, though, right? Because they weren't what they were
yet. Here's the thing. In London, you wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Because neither of those bands were popular in their own country.
Uh-uh.
If that happened in America, everyone would have known, because remember, by 1970, let's say, or 69, 70, Led Zeppelin already had two albums out, and Sabbath was getting ready to put out Paranoid, which came out in like 70. So, but if you were in America, they would have known. If you're in London, you've just been a janitor saying, my God, these guys stink, and I wish they'd cut their hair. Get out of the way so I can get the garbage can. Like, I don't care who you are. But you're right. You're right. In London, no, you would not have. You would, and you wouldn't have cared.
Yeah.
Because you were still thinking that the Beatles and the Rolling Stones were the greatest thing ever to play music, which maybe they are. Who knows? It's not my opinion. But so they never hooked on to that whole heavy metal thing until after those bands came to America. Mm-hmm. Got they on the charts, toured, yeah, and then went back, and all of a sudden they're, oh my God, it's Led Zeppelin, they're from Europe, and Jimmy Page is like, no, screw you, you hated us 5 years ago, you're not going to like us now.
Yeah. I think you can trace London punk's lineage back to those guys, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, you can. Yep.
Yeah, totally.
Hey, so quick question.
Yeah.
Because I love to ask this question of music fans. Mm-hmm. So are you a... London punk, New York punk, DC punk, or West Coast punk?
Ooh, wow. West Coast punk.
Okay. Scott?
Yeah.
I don't know how to answer that question.
I'm a DC punk girl all the way.
Nice.
So two of my concert tickets are Fugazi.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fugazi, what a great band. What a and great like, band.
Yeah, and these were $5 because Fugazi never charged more than $5.
Wow.
Yeah, can you imagine? All right. Anyways, I love asking people what their particular flavor of punk is because I think it says a lot.
See,
probably West Coast like West Coast punk, that kind of surf punk,
mm-hmm.
that kind of music. Like okay. I identify. Not that I didn't like the Clash and stuff like that because that's a different level of punk. But, like, the West Coast surf punk club scene was nuts.
Yeah.
So, Chris, you know me pretty well.
Yeah.
Where would you say I lean towards? I don't know anything about punk. I'm kind of...
I don't think you lean towards either of them.
Really?
Honey, honestly. I don't think you like any of it.
Really?
Okay. I really don't. Yeah, right. I don't. I don't think you like any of it. And it's a little, it can be pretty aggressive and because that's punk. I mean, mm-hmm. basically it was a lot of guys who didn't know how to play instruments very well, but had a lot of aggression and a lot of things to say. And it really came out in the music. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not sure that you could listen to more than a couple of songs because it's because like the Clash came out and that's like a punk band, but that's mild punk. Like, mm-hmm. should I stay or should I go?
I always thought that was pop, actually.
That's the Barbra Streisand of punk. Like, that song. Like, it gets a lot heavier. It gets a lot louder, a lot faster, a lot more screaming and yelling. And, you know, the music can go in six different directions in one song. Like, it's crazy. So I'm not sure that would be your best genre, Scott.
Okay. All right. I'm more of I'll definitely lean towards the hair metal and metal genre of like
there's a level there's like the punk that you know that you heard on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a level of punk that is not something like Fugazi was sort of on that edge of
were on that edge.
Like that edge of like real edgy punk and a little bit playable on the radio, or at least an independent radio station or a college radio station. And there's a level of punk under that that will never hit the radio. Never will. Man, is that music amazing.
Like, the kind of show where if you don't walk away bleeding, it wasn't a show.
It was not a successful show. Yeah. Optimal is that something is broken or bleeding if you walk mm-hmm. out of the show, like maybe a broken finger or a sprained wrist or something like that. Probably a gouge above the eye from, you know, like, I mean, seriously, that's not even a joke. She's absolutely right. Like
mm-hmm.
a successful show, there was probably blood somewhere.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. And yes. cool. So much fun. So
I'm much,
much
more of a wallflower than that.
Yes, you'd be. Yeah.
I'd be eating up.
Remember that? Do you remember that face? Do you remember that face that you made at the Metallica show?
Yeah,
looking
stop.
At Metallica? That would be your face if you had seen one of these concerts.
Okay, like, Robin, to go back to that Metallica show that his wife allowed me to take her ticket. There's a picture that Chris took of me where I was like, I was at the moment where I was just like taking it in. You know, you couldn't see excitement on my face. You couldn't see, you actually saw like deep thought. I'm like, wow, I'm really just absorbing this show. And he'll never let it go. It's a good show. I'll show you the picture sometime. It's good stuff anyway. Where are we? Are we at my
second We need pick? Your number two pick.
Number two. I know. And this is, see, I knew this was going to happen. We're an hour, over an hour already.
So,
Let's go, man. I'm good with time. I'm good with time. Go. I don't know about you guys, but anyway. So, my number two pick, man, this is really a hard decision, but I'm going to have to go with my first concert, my first major concert ever, which was Judas Priest, and Great White opened up for him. And I was a big Judas Priest fan. And I don't know, my dad got me these tickets through work somehow. He got me like some really great seats. They were like kind of similar to what the Metallica seats we had, just right the first risers right off to the side of the stage, you know, maybe about 15, 20 rows up, and they were great seats, and we're right up close. And Great White was awesome. This early in their career. This, I think it was 80. Was their Judas Priest Defenders of the Faith tour, which was, I think, 85. 84, 85. 85, I think. And so Great White was still kind of, you know, early on. And so they were the opening band. And they did their thing. And Judas Priest came on and they did their thing. And it was my first concert, like first major concert. Actually, first concert overall. I don't think I'd ever seen any, like, small bands before. And it just blew my mind. Totally blew my mind. And we were right at the edge of two sections where there was a walkway between the two sections that had a good 20-foot drop. And I remember seeing a guy jump from one side of our section to the other side of the section and just, like, he was just being crazy or drunk or something. I don't know. But overall, it was just an amazing show. I remember one of the encore songs was Hellbent for Leather, which, you know, early on. But
well, there was deeper meaning in that song.
I know. I know things got a little odd as the years went on. But
no pun intended.
But still. They open the song with a Harley, okay? And, everything goes dark, and it's an encore song, so everybody's kind of waiting for that moment. And they start up a Harley on stage, and they got it mic'd up, and it was the loudest thing I ever heard in my life. And it was pretty damn cool. So that was just my first experience, and it really got me, like, to love the whole concert environment. It was awesome. So, and plus I really liked Judas Priest at the time. Like, their Screaming for Vengeance tour or album had, you know, been out for a few years, and I was really into them. And then Defenders of the Faith came out, and the album is, it's okay. That one's, it's got a few good songs on it, but I really appreciate their older stuff that they played at the show. But that was it. That was just my first show, and always has a special place for me.
Not a bad way to start.
Yeah. Not at all.
No.
No. Good deal.
Breaking the law. Breaking the law.
And they did do that one, yes. Yeah, they
see,
did.
Now the sad thing is, every time I think about that, I think of Beavis and Butthead.
washing the dog.
Yeah, it's so funny.
Yeah. I'm Beavis and Butthead. Now, they were funny, but at the same time, they were. It was almost kind of mean to the genre that I love so much.
It was. They were cartoon Spinal Tap. Let's face it.
Oh,
yeah,
they were.
And they're just complete parody. But yeah, it's funny. It's so funny. So what's our, we're on to number three for Robin?
Yeah, three for
Is
Robin.
Is this number three or number one? Whichever.
It's number one, actually.
So, are you ready? Yeah. Drum roll, please. This still sits at the top of my all-time concerts. I have yet to see another show that can knock this one down from its pedestal.
Okay.
And it kind of lands in your category, Chris, of I never thought I'd get to see this person live. And so, like, man, we took extraordinary measures to be able to get to this show. So it was October 1995 at the Lakewood Amphitheater in Atlanta, Georgia, which is a huge amphitheater. And it was a bunch of us piled into a car. We all called in sick or skipped work. Some of us even quit jobs.
Wow.
Just to be able to go. And so I graduated high school in 92. So I was 3 years out of high school. And felt like such an adult going on this road trip to see this show.
21 and ready to rock.
Oh my God. So it's probably five of us in somebody's car. The person who had the best car drove up to Atlanta to see this show, and then we had to drive home after the show was over, and which is probably a really stupid thing to do. But anyways, all of it totally worth it. Still by far the best show I've ever seen in my entire life. And that was David Bowie and Nine Inch Nails for the Outside Tour.
Really?
Nice.
It was unlike anything I've ever seen. So first of all, they co-headlined and they both brought opening acts. So if you're familiar with Bowie, you know one of his longtime guitarists and collaborators is Reeves Gabrel, who had put out an album earlier that year. So Reeves Gabrel was his opening act. And then Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails was a couple years into his record label. And he discovered this band called Prick. And Prick was his opening act. And those were very diverse, to say the least. Like, I know most people listening to this won't know who either of those are. Go look them up. And you'll be like, really? They played on the same bill?
Well, Nine Inch Nails and David Bowie are not, like, even those two are not, you wouldn't expect to see them on the same bill.
It was so amazing. So, they, like I said, they co-headlined. So Nine Inch Nails came out first, played a full set, and towards the end of Nine Inch Nails' set, David Bowie came out on stage and sang two songs with Nine Inch Nails. He sang Reptile, because he liked that one. He used to sing it with them a lot. Mm. And I can't remember the other one he sang. Might have been Hurt.
Oh.
Right? Dude, yeah. I'm telling you. So you think like, oh, isn't that nice? And now this Nine Inch Nails is going to be over soon. Oh, no. So full set of Nine Inch Nails. Bowie comes out, sings these two songs with Nine Inch Nails. A freaking curtain drops. And it's Bowie's band, and now both full bands are on stage, and they sang Hello Space Boy off of Bowie's Outside album, which is a really heart-pounding song. So both full bands playing this song and singing it. I mean, you even in this huge amphitheater, like, it hit you. You could physically feel this song. It's so awesome. And then Nine Inch Nails, most of the band went away. And Trent Reznor stayed on stage, and he sang two Bowie songs. He sang Scary Monsters and I'm Afraid of Americans. Wow. And then Trent left, and it was a full Bowie set from there. So there was absolutely no break between the two. So it was like 4+ hours of music. It was unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it.
Like, the passion that you're putting into this right now, And the way you're describing it, I'm getting the chills. I'm not kidding. I'm getting the chills. This sounds like the most incredible experience. And I was a Nine Inch Nails fan, big time. I was never a huge Bowie fan. I respected him. I liked some of his songs, but I was never a huge fan. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But as far as like Nine Inch Nails and him, them working together like that, it's a spectacle. And it's something, it just impacts you in a way that doesn't that you don't normally get to experience.
I still get chills awesome. Talking
I'm so
about
jealous,
it.
I'm jealous that you got to see it. I'd love to see something like that.
You know, and Bowie's Outside album was a big departure, and you can tell that it was very much influenced by the industrial music scene that was going on at the time. You know, because you guys might have been steeped in hair bands and metal, but
I like the industrial sound.
Yeah.
Nine Inch Nails grabbed my attention very quickly. And if you go back and listen to one of the shows that Chris and I did, I think it was 89, for our heavy metal, that was one of my picks for the top album of that year was Nine Inch Nails, Pretty Hate Machine. Something about that grabbed my attention, and I was a Nine Inch Nails fan from there on out. So anyway, I'm not
surprised at all that David Bowie played with Nine Inch Nails, because Trent Reznor has a huge man crush on David Bowie. He patterned some of his music style off of some of what Bowie, not like 80s Bowie, but earlier Bowie,
like 70s so, Bowie. Yeah,
yeah. That's not a that concert pairing is not a surprise to me at all.
No.
But very cool.
You know, Reznor is clearly influenced by Bowie. That particular album, Bowie was influenced by Ministry and Skinny Puppy and all of the industrial things going on. There's a lot of really interesting sampling on that album. And then Reznor produced the track I'm Afraid of Americans, which sounds like it could have been a Nine Inch Nails track. And then later, when Bowie died, Reznor came forward and talked about how, you know, were it not for that tour, were it not for his friendship with Bowie and Bowie's mentorship, he may not be here. Like, the Downward Spiral wasn't just the name of an album.
That was hardcore.
Mentally, what he was going through, he was killing himself. And Bowie took him aside and was like, you know, you don't have to live like this.
Yeah.
And So now to think back on that tour with like that added layer, you know, it was just, like I said, by far, it was an event more than it was a concert. And I've yet to see anything that can compare to it.
That's cool.
I'm envious of that one. Absolutely. I would love to. I mean, nobody will ever see Bowie again. I mean, you know.
No.
That's just the way it is.
There is some footage. So if you you could probably search on YouTube for like Bowie Nine Inch Nails tour 1995, and there's some footage that exists, and so you get like a glimpse of it, you get like an idea of what it was. You know, it's certainly not the same as seeing it live in person, but you know, I went and looked up as much of it as I could find when Bowie died, because I wanted to relive that moment as much as I could.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah. Wow.
So follow that.
Okay. Fine.
Okay.
Challenge accepted.
All right.
Gauntlet has been thrown.
No doubt.
Okay. All right. Fine. So the best concert, and I went back and forth between like a couple of concerts that I actually played at, but I thought that was kind of selfish. But this concert really stuck out, so it wasn't even a choice, like the best one. So my whole band and I, and this was like 1993, so we've been playing for about 3 years. We were still doing clubs, a little bit larger clubs and things like that. And Metallica was coming to town, touring off the Black Album. We were broke because we're musicians and we could barely afford the tickets that we got, but we wanted to go see them. So I worked at a hotel in St. Pete, and at that hotel, because they were playing at the Bayfront Center in St. Petersburg, Metallica's road crew was staying there.
No way.
And so we're doing stuff with the road crew, getting them all out. I met the tour manager, all this kind of stuff. And being a musician at the time, and also my lead singer and rhythm guitar player worked with me because I got him a job there at the hotel. So we're just enamored by the whole thing, like the whole scene. Like, here's the tour, the road crew, the manager, and all that kind of stuff. And of course, we took very good care of them, like very good care of them. And this was the overnight shift. So we're supposed to, the day of the concert or for loadout, we're supposed to give them a wake-up call at 5 o'clock in the morning in the hotel. The whole road crew, everybody, like, set their little wake-up calls on their phones and get them out. Okay, no problem. So I walk out from the back to start the wake-up call machine, and who is in the lobby but Lars Ulrich.
Ah!
So Lars is talking, and I'm like, Joe, dude, Lars Ulrich's in our lobby. Get out of here. What? No, I'm serious. He's like 5'5", and it's so funny. He's short, tiny little guy.
Yeah.
Tennis player, though. But in any case, so we make these wake-up calls, and Lars had some fun the night before. 5 o'clock in the morning, he's still awake. Obviously was having a very good time wherever he was. And so he comes up, and he's like, dude, what are you doing? His little, you know, foreign accent, a Danish accent. And he's like, I'm making calls to wake up your road crew. He's like, let me make the wake-up calls with you. So he comes back behind the desk, and we're sitting with phones, and he's calling his own crew to wake up, just saying the weirdest stuff. Like, the building's on fire, dude. You got to get – the elevator doesn't work. You have to jump out the window. Like, just crazy stuff. And it's so funny. We're sitting there laughing with Lars Ulrich. So as the day goes on, and there's like a couple more hours in our shift, the tour manager comes in and says, thank you very much for – really taking care of the crew and everything that you guys did while we're here. And are you guys going to the concert? I said, yeah, we got tickets. They're up. And they're like, don't worry about those. Sell them. Give them away. He gives us 4 VIP backstage passes for meet and greet, dude, before and after show. He gives us 4 snake pit passes, which, if you don't – I remember that concert, and was the, one of the concerts where – a very small portion of the crowd was actually in the middle of the stage. There was a cutout.
Oh, yeah.
There was a cutout in the stage, and you stood actually watching the whole show in the middle of the stage. And there's only about 50 people in there, like in this whole little area. And he gave us those tickets. And we went to the show. We do like the whole backstage thing before the show. Then when the concert starts, we go sit in the snake pit. We watched the whole show with all these guys like 10 feet from us. And of course we're in a band. So we're like, this is the most incredible moment of our life. Like, and then backstage after the show, got to meet the band members and all that stuff and take, you know, pictures, which God knows where those pictures are at this point. But, so yeah.
Cause they were on film.
Cause they were on film, and who knows where the film is.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, that was like, I was so in awe. That was the only concert where I was just in like this awe moment of, I can't believe that I'm here right now.
I believe, like, it's called Musical Euphoria.
Yeah, it was. And that was just like the whole thing leading up to that with the hotel part and everything like that. It was like living this musical dream. Sort of. And then being able to sit in the snake pit and see the concert from there and meet them all after the show and hang out a little bit. And I was really just, I would never forget the whole Jimmy Page, Robert Plant thing, obviously, but this one, it was a clearly, like, as far as a concert going musical moment, right on top. There's no other
stuff
thing
of legend,
that
man.
Yeah, it is. It was so incredible. It was so such an incredible, like, 24 hours of just music and hanging out and talking and all that kind of stuff. It was great. And side note to that, so 2 days later, they're playing in Orlando. There was a guitar show that was in Orlando. It was a 2-day guitar show. We had gone to that guitar show, and we're walking around. We're looking. Of course, I'm looking at all these basses and stuff like that, and all of a sudden, people start moving out of the way. And who comes in with, like, 2 security guards but Jason Newsted from Metallica? He walks right to the booth that I happen to be there at, because I like Spectre guitar basses, and he played some Spectre basses also. And he's right there. He recognized me from like 2 days before. He's like, you guys were at the backstage? And I was like, yeah. He's like, And my guitar player, Joe, we were there. And he's like, he's sitting down, he's testing out a bass. And I was there and we're just talking. He's like, and he hands me the bass. He says, check this out. What do you think about this bass? The Spectre. And so I'm playing it and he grabs one and he plays it. And we're sitting there playing like Metallica licks on a bass at a guitar show. So it's like 72 hours of music mayhem that I will never, ever forget in my whole life. Like at that point, we hadn't played with any bigger bands or done any bigger shows or tours or anything like that. So that was like the first time like interaction with a professional musician / rock star or whatever you want to call him. So that was just unbelievable. That was an unbelievable 3 days, like crazy 3 days.
So this is before the time you drank that bottle of Jack Daniels with Lemmy?
I don't know what you're talking about.
What?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you'll have to tune into our 80s mixtape auto reverse.
Man, best of heavy metal years for that one. Stories.
Yeah.
So
we played real quick. We played with like Motley Crue, Queensryche, Godsmack, Megadeth, Sammy Hagar, Slash, just all kinds of bands.
Motorhead,
all kinds of Sabotage. It's fun.
You're not going to mention Motorhead, are you?
Yeah, Motorhead.
Yeah. That's awesome. What was your band?
It's a band called Smackhead. You've probably never heard of us. Never heard of us. But, man, we had a good time. That's really amazing. All that was important. Yeah, we played some good music. We met some really cool people. We played some great shows, and we had a lot of fun.
Dude, I wish you would have shot me a message saying you've got the ultimate, because how do I follow this?
You don't. Just cut the recording.
Like, I'm just gonna say it was Pink Floyd 1994 and it was an amazing show, but I can't really
Well, that's an amazing show.
It is.
I can't compare to like all that. That is an amazing concert experience. Like, if you want to, like, the topic of the show is like your favorite concerts or favorite concert moments. Dude.
Yeah.
That's a moment.
Yeah, that's both.
That's incredible.
He bought me a Morley wah pedal while we were at that guitar show.
Wow.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Do you still have it?
I do not have it. It broke many years ago. It broke. I broke it. Not on purpose. And just from playing it every night for 8 years, it finally died.
Well, at least you got use out of it. So
got a lot of use out of that.
Morley. Scott, I was thinking the only thing missing from Chris's story is like, and then we became best friends, and it would be like Metallica fan fiction.
Besties.
Yeah.
We still FaceTime to this day.
I was just talking to Jason the other day.
Good old Jay.
I call him JN.
His friends call him Jay, Scott. Jay, right.
Is it really?
No, I have no clue.
Chris is like, sorry, y'all, gotta go. Hetfield's calling.
Yeah, you know? Excuse me. Podcast over.
Oh God.
Lars wants to go play a little tennis.
Dude, so you know what's killing me is the 15 shows that you and I did together, 15 or 16, I don't even remember how it is now, with the 80s metal. You never told me that story.
Because we were talking about the 80s.
Okay.
So the 90s never really came up.
Okay. That's fair. Yeah. You've still never told me that story. We've been together many times since then.
It's just never come up. But yeah, no, that was good. That was a pretty amazing time. It was a lot of fun.
Dude, that's an amazing story. Thank you so much for sharing. So I guess I'm going to wrap it up with my favorite personal concert, which I'm still thinking, I'm like, wow, how am I ever going to compete with this? And it's not a competition.
Your story, man.
So
just roll with it.
So 1994, July 12th, it was at Soldier Field in Chicago, which is a great big outdoor theater. I believe there were 61,000 some odd people there. Big show. And Pink Floyd was on their, it was on the Delicate Sound of Thunder tour, and it was one of the most amazing visual shows I've ever seen. Like, you don't want to be up front for a Pink Floyd show. You want to be like towards the mid to back. because there's so much lights and spectacle and theatrics going on that you just can't believe it. And this show stands out to me because they may have had a special machine that worked the weather. And the song that really did it for me was One of These Days, which is a fully instrumental song. And except for one little line of lyric, which is kind of twisted. It says, one of these days I'm going to cut you into little pieces. But besides the point, it's a very bass-driven song. And it builds from this, like, the slow build up to this crescendo and a climax, and then it just drops off dramatically. Well, during this specific song, they had these on the sides of the stage. They had this giant stacks with the speakers, and at the tops of the speakers, they had these inflatable pigs that were like bouncing around from the air being pumped into them or whatever. And they were it was a really bizarre scene. And so as this song started, and we knew that there was rain in the forecast, so we brought ponchos, and me and my buddy, just this guy Ed, and we had great seats because we were like towards the other end of the field, and we could see the full view of the stage and all the lighting and the lasers and whatnot. So as the song starts, it starts going, you know, starts off slow, and it starts drizzling a little bit with the rain, and then the song starts building and building and building and starts getting more intense, and the rain starts coming more and more and more. And at like the height of the song, it's like really jammed. The bass is just jamming, and the guitar is jamming, and they got a slide guitar going in there, and the pigs are at the top of the speakers and they're bouncing, and it is freaking pouring rain on this whole show in Soldier Field. And as the song suddenly just comes to a very an abrupt halt, that's just how the song is, it just comes to a complete stop, and the rain freaking stopped.
No way.
And it was the most bizarre experience. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Like, are they pumping rain at the top of the stadium into the thing? Is this a setup? And and I thought, cool. For years, I told this story. I've been telling this story ever since I went to the show, that it was, you know, like the most intense experience of a concert I've ever seen. It was like the most interactive. And I still think they were controlling the weather. But I ran into a guy, a brother of a guy I used to work with, just randomly. I was with this guy I worked with, and his brother showed up at some little social get-together. We were at a bar or something. And he starts telling this story about being at this Pink Floyd concert, and he tells it the same way I did, like how the rain was like, it was like intense, and then it just stopped at the same end of the song. I'm like, dude, I was there, man. And it really was a special moment in a concert. And I've always been a Pink Floyd fan. So it's, you know, when you're a big fan of a show, and, you know, they always stand out a little bit more for you.
Yeah.
But that was a very intense moment that I never expected to see, and I knew it would never be repeated, just because I haven't seen too many outdoor shows since then, actually. Other than Van Halen a couple years ago with Chris and Rosetta. Remember that?
Yeah.
And David Lee Roth was horrendous.
Absolutely terrible. Yikes.
So anyway, we are like well into our show, and I was thinking 90 minutes, but we're going over it. I just had a couple quick questions for both of you guys. First of all, do you have anything to say about Pink Floyd and my story? I mean, you probably don't have any experience with it, so.
Oh, only that it just goes to prove that, like, Roger Waters does, in fact, have some sort of deal with the devil, because, you know, controlling the weather is kind of on another level.
It was pretty radical. It was something special. And I didn't even get to tell the story about when they did Shine On You Crazy Diamond, where this giant thing comes out of the middle of the field and shines these, it's like a reverse disco ball where it's being, it opens up into like this giant flower, and it's just shining these bright lights all the way around. I'm talking about Soldier Field. You're talking about a football field of people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was an incredible show overall.
That's awesome.
Unbelievable. So anyway, I did have a couple of quick questions. Are there any honorable mentions real quick? And we're not going to get into detail, but like...
I have one quick honorable mention story, which is the first Lollapalooza, which was 1991.
Okay.
And we were determined to stay up front for Nine Inch Nails. Nice. We made it through Butthole Surfers. We made it through Henry Rollins. We made it through the first half of Ice-T and then totally forgot that Ice-T released Body Count that year. And halfway through his set, the stage flipped around. He went from playing Ice-T music to Body Count music, which was Ice-T's black thrash band, case you're unfamiliar. And
I've heard of it, but I don't know it.
Oh, his big song was F the Police.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the crowd lost their freaking minds. And I was very upfront, and I was just the tiniest little white girl back then. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is it. This is where I'm going to die because this whole crowd is moving. And I like attached myself to this giant skinhead who was like a step in front of me and off to my right. And I was doing great until he lost his balance and basically in an attempt to like catch his balance, punched me in the chest with his spiked skull ring.
Oh, my God.
I was wearing a white t-shirt and they kept spraying the crowd with water. And so I literally have like blood running down my chest and my boyfriend yanked me out. And so after we got out of like the tightest part of the mosh pit, it was like the seas literally parted. Like it was the most incredible like concert cred I've ever had in my life because people saw this tiny white girl with a bloody shirt coming out of the pit and they were looking at me like, F yeah, you go.
And where was this? Lollapalooza where?
It was in Orlando.
Orlando,
in 1991.
Okay. Yeah, whenever you say Lollapalooza, I think of Chicago.
Because, yeah, because that's it's such where a huge, it is now.
It's a huge thing, yeah.
Yeah.
I know it as a lot of poor losers. That's what we called it, a lot of poor losers, because that's what Perry Farrell called it. Like he just because it was a bunch of loser bands that couldn't get promoted and do big tours, so they decided they would do it all together, and then it spun way out of his control and
yeah.
got huge.
And it became big, yeah.
Yeah. I'll throw an honorable mention,
uh-huh.
and I'll use a show that we played. We played Second Stage, and it's also Lollapalooza from 96, I think it was. It was the Metallica Soundgarden.
Yeah, I saw that one.
And we played Second Stage at the one that was in Florida, and wow. Man.
Dude, I probably saw you.
You might have if you were there. Yeah, if you were there, you probably did. We played Second Stage, which was the unsigned act stage.
Yeah.
We played that stage. We did a 45-minute set on that stage. Man, was that cool. But the coolest part about that whole show was the backstage. Oh, boy. That was good.
I was completely obsessed with Soul Coughing at the time.
Good band.
Yeah, and that's why I went. And so I got to meet Soul Coughing and the Melvins at that show.
Cool. We made really good friends with Screaming Trees.
Oh, fuck. I love Screaming Trees. Yeah. And I'm sorry if I'm not supposed to say the F word.
It's okay.
But
Scott can bleep it out.
No, and we don't even bleep it out anymore. We just let it roll.
No, they are such good guys. We made good friends with Screaming Trees. We hung out with them for like an hour backstage just talking about music and all kinds of stuff. It was great. Got to meet Soundgarden. Metallica was in and out because they were on a tour. Didn't get to meet them that time during that, but met all the bands and everything. It was so great. But Screaming Trees are such cool guys. Just really cool guys. Yeah, really cool guys. And I will throw this out to you, but real quick, because I won't get too deep into it. But the girl that was with her shirt off behind the stage while she was playing, I was backstage, was actually a concert that we did. We were the second act in a 9-act lineup in a festival in California, of all places. And it was Jennifer Finch from L7, the bass player.
No way!
Yeah, and she's a great girl. She's a very wholesome Christian girl.
Hmm.
Who's, yes, that's all I'm going to say about that.
Who accidentally got her shirt ripped off. It happens.
Maybe a couple times that day.
Yeah. Okay.
You never know.
I just had mine ripped off today. So.
All right. Well not appropriate for this podcast. But
I was by myself.
One day, remind me to tell you about my jack off Jill story.
Oh my Uh-oh. God. Okay. This is good. Right,
I'll go more into the Jennifer Finn story.
Okay, we're going to have a continuation, another topic of this type in the future, because we're going on close to 2 hours now. So I'm probably going to have to split this podcast up into two episodes, and I'll find us somewhere in there. But I wanted to ask you guys two quick questions before we go.
Okay.
What band have you seen the most times in concert? And this is just a quick answer. Robin, who have you seen the most?
This is the weirdest tie of all times. And it's
a tie, really? Okay.
Yeah. I'm a big repeat person. So it's a tie between Henry Rollins and Duran Duran.
Henry Rollins?
That's two different ends of the spectrum, isn't it?
Right.
And I love Rollins. Rollins is a badass. And,
love it, yeah. Like Henry Rollins.
There was an HBO special HBO or something. He did some special a few years ago.
Was it a spoken word concert?
I don't think it was a spoken word concert. It was more. It was almost more of a stand-up routine.
But that was his spoken word. That was his spoken word.
But at the same time, it was a benefit for. I think it was South America, somewhere in Africa, where it was some benefit to help all these little villages that have no water or something, and so he was benefiting them, but at the same time he's telling all these amazing stories, and he was hysterical, it was really relatable, and he's like just telling it how it is, and so after that point I always loved Rollins just seeing that show. But yeah, that's a really wild end of the spectrum. Duran Duran and Henry Rollins. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Chris.
Metallica, 11.
11, nice.
11 times. I've seen him 11 times.
Did I go with you for number 11?
Number 11. Yeah. This one goes to 11.
This one goes to 11.
Well done, sir.
Nice. Thank you.
I love it.
Yeah, and all different variations of Metallica, like starting from Master of Puppets Metallica all the way through up to last year.
Right.
So it's been like every variation of their music.
Was that last year? That was 2 years ago, dude.
2 years ago? Okay. Except why well, I'm... you're right. You're probably right.
Actually, no, year and a half. Year and a half. July of 2017. So.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, so the band I've seen the most, and this is by association or by default, is Great White. And that's because they opened up for bands that I went to see. And then there was one, like a larger concert. So there was a radio station out in Southern California called KNAC, Pure Rock. 105.5. Love that. KNAC, man. They had their 1 year anniversary concert, and I saw them. I saw Great White. I saw Guns N' Roses. I saw Armored Saint. I saw who else was there? There's it was a nice lineup. And they all played like three or four songs each and then left the stage, which was a surprise at the time for Axl to actually, allow that.
Show up.
Show up on time and allow only three or four songs. So, yeah, it was early on in there. It was right when their album came out. In fact, and then there was another one, Pirate Radio, that came out like a year after KNAC had opened up, and Pirate Radio's theme song was Welcome to the Jungle. So anyway, that Great White is the one group that I've seen the most. Okay, so one last question, and then we're going to wrap it up. We're going to do, you know, social media credentials and all that. If there was one band that you haven't seen that you wanted to see all this time, who was it? And I know, Robin, you already mentioned this early on in the show. Who was that?
Well, band? Yeah, Old School Van Halen.
Yes.
But the other one that I wish I would have gone to see was Sonic Youth.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, I never saw
Sonic
Youth
show. You
have
a really
show.
Eclectic... I love your eclectic appreciation of music.
Oh, I'm all over the place.
That's beautiful. I love it. And I didn't appreciate that until, you know, a good 10 years ago. At first, I was all like, if you're not metal, you don't know what you're talking about. But no, I've changed my ways in the last 10 or 15 years. It's been awesome. So, Sonic Youth, or the original Van Halen, before David got too weird.
Yeah. Before Just a Gigolo.
Okay, thank you. Oh, thank you for saying that. That was horrendous. So, Chris, how about you? Who have you not seen that you need that you would have loved to see?
Well, that's difficult.
Uh huh.
Because I've seen so many, but I've also played with so many. So, like, a lot of the bands that I'd want to see I've seen, but I probably would say the Kick era in excess.
Oh, really?
When they were like at the height of their powers. That was after Listen Like Thieves, mm-hmm. and Kick was probably their most popular album, I guess. Because right after that was like Suicide Blonde, then it kind of wasn't all that great. Like, music-wise, it was different. And so, yeah, probably in excess in the Kick era. Like, that Kick tour.
Wow.
I would have loved to have seen that, because I think that's... I've seen every heavy metal band that I've ever wanted to see. Like, I can't name one off the top of my head that I haven't seen that or was at a show with that I hadn't seen. So it's difficult. So outside of that genre, it would be in excess during the Kick era. And I bet all the chicks there were hot. It's always a good byproduct.
So, Chris, I know you know that, yeah, I've told you the story, but I accidentally saw Iron Maiden back in the 80s.
You know, how do you accidentally see a band?
Well, I didn't intend to go, and then...
did you think it was a gay club, and you walked
no,
in,
no,
and all
no,
of a sudden
no.
it was there?
No, it was a friend of mine that I was in high school with. His older brother came home from wherever he was, and it was... He's like, hey, I got an extra ticket to the Iron Maiden concert. Who wants to go tonight?
That's cool. Isn't
like,
that neat, though?
I'm like, okay, I'll go. So I actually rode on the back of his motorcycle way to Long Beach Arena and saw Iron Maiden for the Power Slave tour, which was kind of cool. Anyway.
That's neat.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. I hardly remember the concert, though. I don't know why. I might have been of altered mind. I'm not going to say for sure, but I don't know. There might have been something involved. Anyway, that's all. That's you know, the people that I wish I would have seen, I really wish I would have seen Def Leppard back in the day.
Because
I like some of their early stuff, like the first couple albums, like High and Drive. I would love to have seen them during their High and Dry tour. That would have been pretty freaking awesome. They have some good songs on that album. I did see Motley Crue in for their Girls, Girls, Girls tour, but I wish I would have seen them earlier in their career. Other than that, so wow, this was a really good show, I gotta say. And we gotta wrap it up, though.
Let's do it again.
I played with Motley Crue.
I know you did. I wish you would have been able to tell your Stephen Piercy story too.
Oh God.
That'll be for another time. Robin, are you interested?
I have a Stephen Piercy story too. We need to
come here. Now we have to talk about
yeah.
it. Well,
oh.
I'm already splitting this up into two shows, so we can still talk a little bit more. You want to compare Stephen? You want to throw down Stephen Piercy stories? I have none.
Next time.
Okay, next time.
Yes.
All right. So, all right. Well, let's. I'll wrap it up here. thank you guys so much for joining 80s Mixtape Auto Reverse or Bonsai Retro Club, whatever you want to call it. We're all big, happy family here. Robin, thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
And Chris, it's good to have you back, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be back.
You and I have
worked out schedule.
You and I have had a lot of fun talking on about music. And
yeah,
Robin, if you ever want to come back, if you want to talk more music, like we would love to. I need to hear these Stephen Piercy stories compared to each other because they're good. I know Chris is good, but so we are Bonsai Retro Club. You can find us at BonsaiRetroClub.com. Robin, do you have some things that you want to tell us about before we go? Like any upcoming things, any exciting things going on?
No, just trying to get through Christmas. But St. Pete, if you're in the Tampa Bay area, St. Pete Podcasters comes back in January.
Yes.
I might have a couple of podcasts up my sleeve that will launch in early 2019. Stay tuned. And if you want to see me talking about music, you can follow me just about any social media platform at Robin Sales, RobynSayles.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Chris, what do you got?
Yes. I don't have anything. I'm just saying. I'm just living, man. I'm just living.
Yeah, I know you guys are preparing for a big Christmas party coming up.
Oh,
so.
My goodness, yes. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Okay, Robin, I got to interject real quick. Robin, his wife, Rosetta, throws the most amazing Christmas party you've ever seen. Like, the most amazing decorations in their house. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. It's crazy.
And I'm sure that
it's so crazy. I can't even deal with it.
I'm sure she's got Chris working really hard to do all the fun stuff.
Oh, we've got stuff. We're not even done yet.
So 3 years ago, real quick.
We're on weekend number three. Installing the Christmas decorations.
Yeah. The first year that we were invited to their Christmas party, Rosetta, on the day before the party, falls off a ladder and breaks her heel, like fractures it intensely.
Oh my god!
Yeah, like when I heard about this, I'm like, "Well, they got
like two screws, like two screws in her heel."
Oh
like,
yeah,
bad, real like, bad.
Yeah,
yeah. But she's a trooper, and she went with the party.
They followed through with the party. She was sitting on a couch with her leg up in a big, huge wrap of cast, and she never lost her smile off her face. So
That's my wife. Yeah. That's my wife. She's a trooper.
So anyway, let's do this again. And Chris, you never got to get your credentials. I know you're on Christopher Zen. At Christopher Zen on Twitter, right?
Yeah, at Christopher Zen on Twitter. I really don't use Facebook a whole lot, so and that's about it. I don't use Instagram and Snapchat and all that stuff, but Twitter, yeah.
Twitter, y'all.
I love Twitter.
Yeah, and I'm Twitter challenge. But if you want to look me up, you can find me at either 80s Auto Reverse on Twitter, or you can find us on Bonsai Retro Club on Facebook or Twitter. Either way, you can find us. So anyway, thank you guys so much for joining us. We will try to do this again very soon and have some fun with music talk.
Good times, folks. Yeah, we'll have to do this again sooner than later and compare Stephen Piercy stories.
I can't wait.
We'll get into Jennifer Finch and some backstage antics, and it'll be fun.
All right. Sounds good.
Right on.
All right. You guys have a good night.
All right. You too.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Ben. A Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai Danielson!
Hey, Bonsai!
Bonsai!